It was an evening in November, and it was the graduation ceremony of my university. And I was on my way to it. And this is in Scotland, of course, and I drove on to the M8 in Glasgow, a road I know very well, and I drove that road every day. In fact, truthfully, I used to work in Edinburgh, and so I knew I'd drive that way to Edinburgh, and I'd driven it every day. And when I was studying, I drove it the other way to Glasgow, and this time I experienced missing time. This is very strange. So this is a road that I know very, very well. And yet, 30 minutes pass, and I discover I'm going the wrong way on an empty road. Instead of driving towards Glasgow, I'm driving towards Edinburgh, and 30 minutes along the road before it dawned on me that this is not what I should be seeing. But what happened to that 30 minutes in between? There's nothing, not nothing. That's like missing time. So I had to turn the car around and head back to Glasgow. But the point is, it's a missing experience. It's like it almost as if for that moment somebody stepped in, changed something, and put it back. But he didn't put it back. It wasn't put back quite right. That's how I read it. I mean, in my mind, I'm trying to explain to myself how could I have gone there to get to the road I need to be on in Glasgow. I mean, I've actually physically, from the traffic lights, got to cross the road above, go down onto the motorway ramp, and follow it that way. And how could I possibly have just turned left and headed towards Edinburgh? It didn't make any sense to me. It's a weird, weird situation. It may have happened one other time to me also, but definitely that time, I felt there was something off about it. And the road was totally empty. This is only like 7 p.m. at night in the winter, which of course is very dark in Scotland. But a very creepy feeling came, I felt as if there was someone there with me in the car. It really felt weird. I had to pull it until I saw the lights of Glasgow going across along the M8. It never really wore off until then. I felt a bit more comfortable getting out of the darker places. But these are just stories, but experiences. And as I say, you have to put yourself in places where you're going to get these experiences. And you will experience things. You definitely will. Now, the thing about Scotland is there are many, many locations like that, and places that, if you're alone, it's more likely you might experience something. Now, part of that, of course, our own psychology. Well, my dad used to talk about something that I never experienced, because I do a lot of hill walking, or I did, and I never ever felt like alone or vulnerable. Well, my dad's quite the opposite. He used to feel. He said sometimes you just get this feeling when you're in a place, it's like you shouldn't be there, and that's a curious thing. And he even as when he was in his 40s, he experienced something weird, and he got to it really like kind of freaked him out a bit. And I think I'll keep that story for another day, because it's quite uncanny. It's a bit disturbing. So, but I think one time I came across that feeling, but I've never really had that. I've been gone fishing myself and wandered up into the mountains and all kinds of stuff, and I never really had any issues that way. In fact, I like my privacy. I like being able to do that. My mind, I can, experience and nature and view it. So I see it, part of it. So, but one time I did, and it was in the mountains. I was looking for something else, and I came up off the river, and a way I don't usually come, up this little embankment hillside through these trees. And what I found was a roundel, and that's like an old settlement. I found one, and people in the area, there's something like that, but it's not that, because even trying to talked to someone about it. They were talking about this other thing that looks like a Roman theater or something. I said, no, definitely not that. This is a roundel. Roundel, when it's like people who lived in the farming community, tiny little houses. It's like if you truck, you can trace the rocks right round. You can see that you can see the rocks up like this under the turf, and you can walk around the top of it, and you know you're on the wall. That was the perimeter wall. It's a round shape, and inside there was little houses where people would have lived with the cattle back in the day. And having found a thing, and you know, just I suddenly got this feeling of being very vulnerable, and like I had gone somewhere I should not have gone. It felt like, you know, I had intruded. So I apologized to whatever, and I left the place. A strong feeling that I had intruded in something. And afterwards, I mean, those things, if you find something like that, you know, chances are some archaeologists will go and excavate it. I kept quiet about it. I don't want people digging it up, to be quite honest. It probably is interesting things there. But there are some interesting ancient tumuli around there. And as a teenager, me and my friend tried to excavate one. You know, we were very, very careful. We weren't going to damage anything. I was studying related topics. So we knew what we were doing. And we were looking at it without damaging anything. And we just wanted to see basically how deep it went. And we could see through, when we were able to move a few rocks, we could see a gap down into it. It could, maybe it drops 10 feet or whatever. But there's something down there. And that's where we left it, because, you know, that's we've been conscientious, let's just say, you know, that someone more experienced and should be excavating a thing like that, not us. But we were just curious about how shining our flashlights down into this darkness, what is probably an ancient tomb, just a slit there, he had nightmares all that week afterwards, which is a weird thing. And I had a dream, and my dream was quite interesting, but it wasn't like he suffered nightmares, but my dream at that point was something else. And it comes about when you want to start reading into this stuff. I was studying some anthropology at the time, and I was looking at the books of Cornelius, Henricus Cornelius Agrippa, the famous occultist. And the point is, if you start reading that stuff, you will experience things. I swear, you will. You will experience things. It's in your mind, it's in your subconscious, it's in your conscious. I don't want to talk about Aleister Crowley right now, but if you want to read into that stuff, chances are you're opening yourself up to possibilities. You start reading into these things, believe me, you will experience all kinds of things, good and bad. But at that time, I was reading the work of Henricus Cornelius Agrippa, trying to make sense of it. Why I got interested in him was I went to Dublin Cathedral, where some of my family are buried. Some of my family are buried there. That was in Dublin. And I went to the museum, which was the Leighton Library. And it was a bishop there who had a lot of bad books, you know, books with the printer's devil stamped on it. Why a bishop owned those books in the 16th, 17th century? I don't know. It's a common story. It's a common story. I mean, you know, you look at a bishop's library back then, there had been bishops who are also somehow involved in the occult. I don't know about that, but it's a common enough story. I accept that just maybe you want to know what the competition are up to. You know, you want to know what the other side's doing. Absolutely. But, you know, there was something more about this guy. He had all the original books by Agrippa. And what the people there had done is they'd photocopied the basically his charts about correspondences and how things correspond, which is an interesting idea. So a correspondence has got me into looking at it, you know. Basically, the correspondences are based on the Greco-Roman gods as the, you know, for each month of the year and all the things which correspond to them. And somehow the nine orders of heaven and the nine orders of hell and how they relate to one another. Orders of the angels and the orders of the demons. Yeah, it's all there. And maybe it's the whole picture, how you're meant to accept this thing works. So I was reading this stuff at that point, and my friend, as I say, he had strange nightmares. And I had a nightmare. And my nightmare, though, was more like in line with Agrippa. And basically, I know my father was in the dream, some other people I knew, but I was wearing the Cross of Malta in the costume I was in. We were knights, and I was wearing the Cross of Malta. And a demon was fleeing ahead of us in the dream. And basically, we went after him with our swords, and this is the dream, this demon. It was a weird situation, but I remember it because it was in a building like a castle, and obviously or a cathedral, hunting down this demon, passing through doors and alcoves and things like that. It was just very strange, passing tombs and whatever. But I wasn't afraid. And then when I woke up, I felt that I'd been, this is true, this is, I felt I'd just been promoted, like risen up, promoted. For people who are into this stuff, you know, adepts and all that stuff, they would probably accept that as some kind of leveling up. So, an occult leveling up. So, but the pun is, thankfully, I'm on the good side. So, and this demon, he couldn't face us. So that was the dream, and that's more in line with Agrippa. But it just so strange that it coincided with that week my friend and I had been, you know, looking into this ancient tumuli, ancient burial place from the Celts. Just wondering about it. We were just but as I say, I went to people's minds at ease. We were totally conscientious and respective of the gravesite and any future archaeology that might go on there. We didn't violate anything, and I think that's important. A lot of people have strong opinions about that, and I get that. Mostly curiosity, and he wrote it up in his a report he was doing for college, what we were up to, because it was part of his coursework. Quite interesting. In that part of Scotland, there's just a lot of mysterious things. There are incredible stories. My friend used to live in Edinburgh. He lived on in Newington, Edinburgh. He had a great apartment there. You could see Arthur's Seat from the window. Beautiful. Absolutely beautiful. So, and what he and I went to do one time was to see that Edinburgh had its own Faust. This is true. And this guy who apparently had his wealth came from, no one knew, and he could live in this big house, and we went to see his house, and the Edinburgh Faust is what they call him. That's something to look up. There's a fascinating little story. And he came to a bad ending, and the neighbours said that they heard screaming and unearthly noises coming from the house the night that he perished. And basically, even before he had died, they called him Faust. They believed he was like our Faustus. Dr. Faustus, same idea. Had he sold his soul to the devil? Maybe. And then it was like his holiness, his hellishness more like, himself coming to collect. The moral of the story is, don't sell yourself to the devil. Don't do it. It's not a good idea. It's not a good deal. It's not a bargain. So, slash it off. But Edinburgh, you know, he used to show me some creepy places there. And there are some creepy places, believe me. So, but I used to go to the Covenanters graveyard. which I know full well because my own ancestor went through there and suffered the final punishment for being in the wrong place at the wrong time. That was quite strange to go there and commune with the place and really feel something. Is it a sixth sense? You tell me. You tell me. I believe it's being receptive. And I mean, it's like saying a witch is born. A witch is born, witches, do they become witches? And that, there's an answer for both. Either could happen. Hereditary people, hereditary witches, hereditary pagans, hereditary whatever. And in my case, it's definitely hereditary. Growing up in a family where, we were once close to the land and had a lot of old opinions and beliefs. I'm just not ready to give them away. Not ready to surrender them to modern living. Because you know what? I think some of them are true. As I say, I was discussing my grandmother. You get all these people calling themselves Wiccans and whatever. And she would probably be very skeptical of that. Someone said, I mean, it's like something I was reading Raymond Buckland wrote about. He said, "Oh, people in Scotland, 200 years ago, they were Picty Wiccan," is what he calls them, Picty Wiccan. But they didn't know it. What a stupid thing to say. So these people, he said they were Wiccans, but they didn't know it. They didn't know they were Wiccans. Well, because maybe they weren't Wiccans at all. Maybe they were real. It's folklore. This is how they lived. I accept, oddly enough, I'm a reader of Raymond Buckland. Don't get me wrong, I read his books. I've read, but he's passed on, of course. And he's got some good stuff out there. But some of his conclusions were a bit doubtful. I'm particularly interested in Picty Wicca as a concept because I don't believe it exists. I don't believe it's true. I don't believe it's true because he would have called my grandmother Picty Wicca, and she wouldn't. My grandmother went to church, so let's get it through. She went to church, Christian church. So, but she had these beliefs passed down to her, as a farmer's daughter. And of course, a lot of exchange of information with the Roma community who would come and work on the farm and Scottish tinkers. So there's a lot of local knowledge and folklore. Is that witchcraft or is that folklore? It's folklore. Sorry, it's folklore. No, I'm not knocking. You want to call yourself a Wiccan, that's fine. And a lot of it you could believe. I don't. My problem is, and this is probably the difference, is if you want to make something ceremonial, then yes, probably. That's probably Wicca. Some ceremonial religious thing out of it. Absolutely. But the other thing is, this is how people lived. You gotta remember, there was no pharmacies. There was nothing, absolutely nothing. You get sick, this is insane. You could die of toothache. it's like a story I was reading about one of my ancestors. It said that you gotta laugh. It's tragic, but you gotta laugh. And he was bitten on the leg by a man who had a bad tooth, and he died of blood poisoning naturally. I mean, that's you gotta think. We're living at a time when there was no cure for anything. So unless you had some knowledge of plants and. And again, this harks back to the Templar Knights, or more accurately in Scotland, the Knights Hospitallers, who are kind of lumped in with the Templars. But the Knights Hospitallers may have actually more to do with Scottish history than the Scottish Templars, and I'll argue that one. And they had a lot of knowledge on how to heal, and particularly in the battlefront. Where we had bleeding men or whatever, they had to attend to them. But the Scottish Knights Templars and the Ho Knights Hospitallers kind of lumped into one, and they are quite different. The video I do want to do about Rosslyn Chapel, and my explanation of Rosslyn, which I've never saw anywhere. I never saw this. This is my own explanation as an historian. I've looked at it. Now, what about what Rosslyn's really about? I want to go on to this now. It's to commemorate the Battle of Roslyn. It's in history, but it's not a big, no one makes a big deal about it. And this happened when Edward decided to sneak north with his army, and the it was like the English are coming moment when a rider rode to Edinburgh and told the Knights Hospitallers that the English army was on its way. So the Hospitallers rode out to Roslyn to meet them and fought with them there and defeated them. They defeated Edward's army there. It was a small army, but an attack, all the same, a sneaky attack on the capital, Edinburgh. Although I don't have the actual facts to hand, but a Sinclair was involved in the battle. He was a Knights Hospitaller, and consequence, the this is, and I don't want to get into my own interests here because this is private, and but I can tell you that he built that. This is something that comes down in particular Scottish societies, let's just say. He had an interest in building something to commemorate the battle there and the dead. Well, there was some dead, and the Roslyn Chapel came out of it. Now that is a fascinating place in itself, and I've got a boatload of photographs of it, all the important bits that I know what to photograph. Whether you're an occultist or a Freemason, you would get something out of it. Believe me. I'm going to make that video eventually.